Want entertainment designed just for you? Then check out customizable streaming TV from Xfinity. It makes your life simple, easy, awesome.
Xfinity gives you customizable streaming TV options. Enjoy the most free shows anywhere on any device, and even access your streaming apps right on your TV with X1. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today to learn more. Restrictions apply.
Hi, folks listening to Suicide Buddies. Dave and I just really want to put out there that we definitely want you to take care of yourselves. If you are having truly dark thoughts, we really do recommend that you call 1-800-273-TALK. They are actually truly good, and they do give really valuable information and conversations back and forth. So thanks for listening to the pod.
You know just what to do when I look at you, and I don't wanna go. They call me on the phone and won't leave me alone, but I don't wanna go. Doesn't matter what they say.
Oh my god, the most effeminate fart possible.
Nah, man, that was a man's fart.
Nah, that fart
a
had
man
like
who
a,
hides it. A fart. Welcome to Hiding Buddies.
You know those kind of confident men who hide their farts?
You know how you live Dave. Inside of Handmaid's Tale like me?
Dave, that fart you gave had like a doily on it.
Yeah, it was just so... like my dick.
Oh my god.
Welcome to Suicide Buddies.
Good begin- This is the beginning I wanted.
Yeah, I got a doily on my dick. I do. Right. When I was when I did the last show in Oklahoma City on that big tour, I met a fan who was so cool from Tulsa, and she was very very complimentary of the show in a lot of ways, but one of the things she said, she was like, I have to wade through a lot of dick jokes, but other than that, it's really great. And numerous of our female fans have been like, it's really great, except for all the dick stuff.
When you were doing stand-up, were you Oklahoma City bombing? Oh. Dave?
You didn't even listen to anything
no.
I said.
No, I know.
You were just waiting to say
so,
that.
I was so excited.
Oh, yeah. No, I hear it. Dave.
Yeah, that's the content the female fans love. They don't like the dick jokes, but they love my terrorist.
Hey, Dave, hey, Dave, hey, Dave.
Terrorist
humor. More like Timothy McDave.
Waco, more like Wacko.
What?
Bunch of idiots.
Did you Oklahoma City bomb?
Boy, dude, I just watched
but I did kill like Timothy McVeigh did.
Yeah. I watched this
known whole, white again, supremacist Timothy McVeigh.
I watched a whole documentary about the Oklahoma City bombing.
My set was a lot like him.
Hooded.
The white power guy.
Yeah.
Who killed all those people. That's what my stand-up's like.
I find,
now I'm not listening to you. How's it feel, you fuck?
How does this feel?
How does it feel? I have my
honestly,
two fingers in Hampton's
feels like
butt
domestic,
right now.
It feels like domestic terrorism.
Yeah.
This feels like terrorism, what you're doing to me. This is the most upset I've ever been as a straight white male. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me as a 34-year-old
straight. Can we talk about this?
White male.
It is hard for us right now.
Yo,
it's so hard.
Can
no
we dive
one,
in?
Man, listen, no, seriously, I just want to be real right now, real quick.
Real?
As a straight white man, no one is listening to me anymore. And it is bullshit, dude. It's bullshit.
When
man.
I yell at the Cinnabon now, when I'm yelling at fucking chain restaurants now, I feel a little less power.
Why aren't you listening to me? I got short hair, I got Ray-Bans. What the fuck, dude? I got Ray-Bans, and you know what? Sometimes I got my Ray-Bans, I put them backwards on my head because I don't need them, but I want them to sit on my ears still. And it's like, why aren't you listening to me fucking scream at my kids?
Signed, the Unabomber.
Yeah.
Signed, Oklahoma City.
Yeah, more like Oklahoma City bombed. straight white male, 2018.
Dave, I was trying to listen to you, but I had such a really good take on Oklahoma City Bomber.
No, I loved it.
Were you wearing an Oklahoma City Bomber jacket?
I would say, even Hampton, that it was a hot take, much like the heat from the bomb in the Oklahoma City bombing.
Oh, my God.
That was the hottest take, was that bombing. Actually, the hottest take was probably 9/11. Oh, no, Nagasaki. Oh, man. Hey, welcome to Suicide Buddies.
Hi, guys. This is the best episode of Suicide Buddies we've ever done.
Honestly, I feel really good about it as a straight white male.
This is a mental health podcast. It's a comedy podcast, I guess you could say. We talk about depression, mental health.
We also talk about
suicide in history. Dave tries to emasculate me for a solid hour of a podcast. Folks, if you are regular listeners and you live in Chicago, for the love of God, please come to my album recording. It's locked in. I'm doing it with the Lincoln Lodge. Ticket links will go up. But right now, if you're in Chicago, please, August 31st and September 1st, that's when I'm doing my album recording.
Go to that.
Please come.
You should go.
So much fun.
Go to the show.
Chicago, I love you. It's literally my favorite town to do comedy in. Please.
Chicago.
Well, San Diego's pretty good, too.
You're going to San Diego? The album recording in San Diego?
No, I just love San Diego.
Like, why didn't you do your album recording on 9/11, man? It's only 11 days away. It's only 11 days, you know? It's like a combination of that musical and 9/11.
The financial reasons I couldn't do it, Dave, are too complicated for me to explain to such a boy like yourself.
Well, yeah, all venues are all booked up on 9/11. Years in advance. Yeah, but what are we doing on 9/11 7 years
from
now?
Shout out to the female fans that love this content.
Yeah.
Love this part of the podcast.
You ever notice how the 11 and 9/11 looks like two dicks?
When those towers went down, I was worried it was like my own dick going down. I love it when people tear up about 9/11.
Give it up for really the funny. Brave fire dicks who saved all the dicks from the... I'm imagining a dick with a cute little fire hat on. Let me talk.
Wait, I have a joke I'm waiting to do. That's how friendships work, Dave. You wait for the other person to stop talking so you can do your bits at them.
I know. I have a lot of fulfilling friendships. Oh man.
Dude, this heat wave is killing me.
Yeah, man.
It sucks.
Damn, dude.
LA finally sucks, dude.
Yeah.
Finally, there's a problem with LA.
I know. It was not at all difficult before this. Dude, the heat wave is so bad. How bad?
I hate you so much. How bad is it?
The heat wave is so bad.
No, you don't get to do this. You don't get to do this.
Okay.
All right,
that's fine.
It.
I'm
let's
done. No, it. I wasn't even trying to do that. I just realized I'd said it in that way.
The heat wave is so bad, I might as well be fucking a hot packet.
What are you talking about?
I'm sticking my dick in a hat pocket.
What is this? Where am I?
LA, baby.
Oh, wow. That's true. The industry. Hollyweird.
Oh, welcome to the jungle. We got fun in Dave's.
Have you ever noticed how the 11 and 9/11 looks like two dicks?
Dude, how lame is fucking Guns N' Roses?
Whoa.
Like, it's LA, it's the jungle, man.
Oh, like, dude, this is like, not cool.
There's a homeless dude over there. This is like the jungle. It's like, no, dude, just get a job, you fucking idiot. Like, don't be a fucking sociopath and you'll do fine. Yo, it's like the jungle. It's like a panther over there. And scary snakes are everywhere. Oh, fuck. That song makes me crack up so goddamn hard.
Almost every song they put out, that band is so ridiculous.
It's so ridiculous.
Oh, what do you have an appetite for? Distraction. You're a fucking loser. Yeah.
Oh my God.
We should make one nice song. Should it be a regular length? No. The only nice song we make should be a fucking hour long.
In November, it sometimes rains.
Yeah, also, it should be really boring and lame.
Dude, also, like, one of the worst songs ever was, We Don't Want No Civil War.
Oh,
that
wow.
That fucking song that's, like, an hour long.
It's crazy.
And it's just like, what's the theme of that song? They're like, we want to be civil, but we don't want no civil war. Like,
well, that's also one of those songs.
Does he know any history? Like,
it's one of those songs where Axl Rose decides to use his like indoor voice, which sounds like this. We don't want no civil war.
Axl, keep it down.
Yeah, dude. Did you record this in a library? Hey now, heat wave.
Civil war.
I don't think he's ever read a book.
No, me neither. Man.
I don't think he's even seen Avengers Civil War.
You remember that it took them 50 years to put out an album called Chinese Democracy? Why was this
China
so important to you?
China actually had democracy by the time they put it out.
Yeah. It hasn't come out yet. We just know about it because of our time machine.
It's funny. I mean, respect, I guess, on some level. Like, I'm like,
yeah, man, much respect to Guns N' Roses. You know, fucking
it's,
sick
it's
shit.
It's not
dude.
For me. Same as like AC/DC. It's not for me, but it's like, at a certain
I've
point,
got
I'm
big
like,
balls. Yeah, and he's got big balls. I fucking hate
everything about AC/DC is about balls or bells. So I was like, I got balls on my bells. Bells, balls. Cerebral ballsy. Oh, yeah!
Bell's balls.
Bell's balls! I'm in hell with my balls, and my balls are in hell!
It's like, is this a song? Are you mad? Anyway, guys, come check out my stand-up. It's basically this. It's basically this as an act.
Oh, wow.
Dude.
Okay, so August 31st at North Bar.
Well, I'm not sure the location. It's through Lincoln Lodge, but if you're in Chicago, just please block out those dates.
Please go.
Yeah, don't see your families. Don't see your girlfriends. Come see me. Talk about life.
List stuff? Your jokes.
Good stuff? Yeah, I'll do jokes. That's what I'll do.
That's going to be fun, man. I'm going to try to go, honestly.
He's a psychopath.
I want to go, but I probably won't because I don't live there. It would be nice if you did that in my fucking town. Did stand up for once in L.A. Before we get to the history, the suicide and history we're talking about this week, just want to talk about one quick thing. For the first time in Suicide Buddies history, we got merch, dude.
Herstory. Thank you. What?
In Suicide Buddies herstory.
We do?
Yeah, dude, you know this.
I was
we were talking
to act
about
like
it before
surprised.
The episode. Yeah, why are you so surprised, man?
I'm
I already
so
told
excited,
you.
I'm excited, dude. I mean,
yeah, man.
If you guys want to look like the logo of Suicide Buddies, you want to have a feeling shirt, guess what?
We're not selling the feeling shirt, but we are selling Hampton's face. So you can put on his face and look like that.
Hell yeah. Hellraiser merch.
If you've seen our logo for Suicide Buddies on wherever you get your podcasts, we're both wearing shirts that say feelings. Blue shirts that say feelings in
yeah,
a
dark
specific
blue.
Way.
Yeah, yeah, very nice.
We are selling that shirt. I can't believe it fucking took us so long. people have been asking us, and it's up. The URL, I'll just say it, is teespring.com/suicidebuddies-feelings. That's right, we had to add this later. Oh. But also, we're going to put up the link on all our like Twitter and fucking Facebook and all that shit.
Dave,
so you can't
language.
Remember. Oh, sorry. All that
all that
garbage.
Cum and shit. Put your cum on this shirt and then shit it.
So yeah, if you want a feeling shirt, go get one at teespring.com/suicidebuddies-feelings. Just a reminder, we had to add this audio in later.
Look cool. Support the pod.
Also, we've been talking about doing this for a while, and now that we are putting merch out, we just went ahead and did this too. Our Patreon, which thank you all of you who are listening who's already signed up. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
If you want more content from us, go to patreon.com/suicidebuddies. We have a $5 tier with a bunch of bonus episodes on it, and we're going to keep putting out bonus episodes on that. But there's a new tier. That's $10 a month. With that, you still get all the bonus content, but also you get promo codes for every single piece of merch we put out. with at least a $5 discount on every piece of merch. So if you sign up for that right now, you'll get a $5 discount on the Feeling shirt. And also, ticket shit, right? Whenever we have... Hampton and I
when we
haven't done a big
do
show. Whenever we have shows, you'll get be able to do an early pre-sale on tickets. And anytime we're selling stuff, you
also,
get it.
Also, you get to be in the Suicide Buddies Illuminati. This is the higher tier that you're just going to constantly resent if you're not in it. You're going to be like, well, I'm in the $5 tier, and I think I know society, but I wonder what the Skull and Bones are doing up at the $10 tier.
None of you are wondering that.
All one of you who's wondering about that.
If you're at all wondering, good for you. Well done. Thank you
good
so
for
much.
You. Thank you for believing in me.
So if you want a shirt, get one. But also just, thanks.
Thanks for life. Thanks for enjoying the pod.
I just think it's so cool that so many people have written us and been like, I want a shirt. Dude.
I know. It's pretty fun. And we're also like really interested in like... putting out some prints and putting out some other t-shirt designs. So this is kind of getting the ball rolling. So.
Also, the shirt's just $20. We want you to be able to have it. So it's just $20.
This ain't your $100 George Clooney wear once t-shirt, then throw on a homeless guy.
Well, if we're being honest, we were trying to decide on a price, and I was like, 45, right? And Hampton was like, no, we should sell it for a dollar. And I was like,
both
let's meet in the middle.
Both my monocles dropped. That's right. I wear two monocles. Some people say, why not wear glasses? I say, fuck you, poor.
Fuck you, poor.
I'll do what I want.
Dude, this week on Suicide Buddies, we are talking about Freddie Prinz.
Freddie Krueger, tight. Can't wait.
This
that dude's awesome. No, when you told me that we were doing Freddie Prinz, I was like, that's amazing. He's a comic. He's like, right?
And a father.
Yeah, he's an... True. He's a godfather, godfather two,
Freddie Prinz Sr., to be exact.
Mm.
Yeah, yes. Not the young one.
Famous
of Wing Commander fame.
Shut the fuck up. What the fuck you know about Wing
also,
Commander?
Also, she's all that. Dude, I saw Wing Commander 3 times in the theater.
Hey, Freddie Prinze Jr. is cool, dude.
You fucking shut up. He sucks, and I won't hear anything else. No, I like him and She's All That.
I can't wait. This is going to be a great up.
Hell yeah, dude. We'll be right back, dude.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Doesn't matter what they say, 'cause I'm gonna get my way if I don't wanna go.
I got balls and I'm stuck in hell. Now I got the bills and I got big balls.
That's a good start, right?
It's a good song.
Oh my god, I just now had to process that AC/DC had to sit down and write lyrics.
Okay.
At one point he's like, hell, boss, hell, boss. Like he's just writing the same thing.
Guys, okay, look. Okay. I got this song. I think it's going to be big.
All right.
But I just have one question. Should it be Hell's Bells or Hell's Balls? And they're like, fuck, dude, I don't know.
Dude, I tell you, Cerebral Ballsy would be the best fucking record they could make. That's their comeback.
Totally, dude. Bring back what's his nuts? What's the guy's name? Fucking
what's his nuts?
Bomb. The Bono. Bomb guy. Bono Scott.
Bono Scott. Yeah, who's the lead Bonham singer of Scott. AC/DC? Bono?
Tracy Bonham Scott. Yeah, the lead singer of AC/DC. Yeah, they're so... The concepts of their songs are so basic.
I'm sorry.
This is another one.
I'm really having a merger in my brain here of like Bono... But he's in AC/DC, so he's traveling around the world and just being like, we have to educate the world about our balls.
About balls.
We have to show the African children that are starving. We have to show them our
balls.
They don't know about our balls.
They don't know about balls. They don't know about them.
Some children are so poorly educated, they don't know about my balls.
Every single child in the country of Chad has not seen my balls.
It was worth it. That was the dumbest fucking thing.
Hi, I'm Ballsno. Like Bono, but balls.
Oh, okay. I'll allow it.
I love, too, that there is literally an AC/DC song that just goes, TNT. Fucking, what are we doing?
Then he explains it.
Dynamite.
Because you didn't know what TNT was. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
PMS.
I thought
menstrual cycle. I got ADD. I can't pay attention.
Oh, Lord. That was so good. Thank you so much for that.
PHP. You can make a website.
Shut the fuck up.
Okay, sure.
Shut up.
No problem.
Shut up.
Sure.
Stop it.
You already said that.
All right. That was good. It's good while, it lasted, Dave. Who are we doing this week?
ASMR.
Yeah, I know. I kept running all of the different like probabilities in my brain. I was like, well, you do SARS, then you do AIDS.
311.
He just promotes another band.
They're pretty good. They like the color amber.
They
do. Have you heard the song?
I can't believe this. What a sellout, Dave. You're doing a comedian this episode?
I know.
A fucking comic?
Yeah,
do you
dude.
Know how easy it is to talk about comedians with suicidal depression? I think that's the one requirement to being a stand-up.
To being suicidal? Man, that, you know yes. What is funny is that that is a thing that a lot of people say, and I hate it
I know.
So
it's
much.
It's so funny.
It's just not true.
They oh,
just,
you're like a sad clown, right? You're like a sad clown? Yeah. Tears so, of a clown? That's you?
It's annoying in so many ways. Like, you say, like, I have depression. Oh, yeah, comedian. So. I'm like, fuck off.
Well, I like to open with telling the audience I'm sad, and then I close on I'm sad. And
also,
the
like,
part
if
is
you
I
listen to
talk
show
to the crowd about
and
them
how we
sad.
Talk about things. Like, we are two people who have dealt with that stuff and are feeling better and better and better. Like, truly. And I dip back down. For sure, I'll always have to deal with it. But I really think that if you allow it to, a comedy career that you sort of like slowly rise up in can make you happy. I really, but there's this thing like the comedians say to each other, like they'll say like some comic did something that he got really sad. Like, see, it never gets better, man. Even if you get booked at the improv, you'll still be sad or whatever.
Even if you do Flapper's side room.
It's always the lowest. Yeah, man, even if you have one album out,
dude,
you might still be sad.
He performed at Laughschwitz and he still killed himself.
Wow, that is the peak of the podcast. Laughschwitz?
All is that the a, best rooms, dude.
Is that a
the Chuckle
a comedy festival at Auschwitz?
Thank God they finally brought comedy back there.
Wow.
Laughschwitz. Laughschwitz.
I'm a big fan.
Every comedy club has the worst name. Side splitters, knee slappers, goof 'em ups.
Totally.
Sure laughs a lot.
Tickle
it's
your
just
funny
like,
bone. Come like, on down to the funny bone.
Yeah,
and we'll
guess,
touch you.
Guess I'm an artist. I guess I'll eat nachos and be an artist tonight.
Well, what do you want them to call it? Artist room? That make you feel better?
community art space, Dave? Yeah,
totally.
Maybe, maybe the town you know, cares enough about arts that there's just like, you know, a community art center that brings acts through. I don't know. I don't know,
I
babe.
Don't know.
That would be fucking loony, bitch.
I do think it's funny that you're making fun of comedy clubs that have silly names because you have a silly name.
Fuck.
Yeah. Hampton Young. Got a dumb name.
Hey, guys, come see me record my album in Chicago, August 31st, September 1st. I fucking forgot the date
Come
I was recording.
Come on down to Hampton's Pig Factory.
Hey, it's not all about my... It's not all about my name and how stupid it is, folks.
The whole album isn't about that. You should do a concept album about that, though.
Hampton Young, yeah, more like Hampton Cunt, more like Hampton Blunt, more like Hampton Dunt. But anyway. I did
Hampton
it for an hour.
Dunt. After the third one, you had no more real words.
Oh, no.
Hampton Cunt, Hampton Bunt, Hampton Dunt. Runt, you could have done runt, man. You really fucked up. You're a big, stupid person.
Thank
Massively stupid.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So Freddie Prince,
thank you guys for listening. That was a great episode. Thank you so much.
He's psychopath.
Yeah, we're doing Freddie Prinze, who, yes, not to be convinced with his son Freddie Prinze Jr., who is an actor that a lot of people know. And truly, we're talking
from
about Freddie
Commander,
Prinze,
Scooby-Doo,
from
Scooby-Doo
Wing Commander,
2, Monster Island,
and of course, She's All That.
Oh, that one's good.
Hampton's favorite movie.
Yeah, it's not bad.
That's the one where the girl's fucking ugly.
Yeah,
and then they make her hot.
Dude, usually I'm barfing at the top of the movie. When I just see the girl, I'm like,
no.
Puking over my boner. Just, I hate my life.
It is funny to look back at movies that we all knew and talked about, and the concept is, she's ugly, and now she's hot.
And then,
God damn,
when she
gross.
Takes off her glasses,
she's hot.
She's basically naked.
Yeah, totally.
So it's a totally different person.
Yeah, she goes from being ugly and smart
she's
to
got,
hot and stupid.
She's got double D.
Oh, my God. I fucking wish I were dead.
She takes off her glasses. She's got double D's, dude.
I can't. I wish I didn't
remember
laugh.
When you were a kid and you were like, that is the biggest tits could possibly be.
Yeah. Can you believe?
Double D.
Double D. Dude.
Two D's, dude.
Dude.
That's dude. Two D's.
This is
oh my God. Anyway, She's All That. I kind of stand by it. It's pretty cute. It's cute. It's a cute movie. Shut up. It's cute. Shut up. Shut up. Fuck you. It's cute. Fuck you. Shut
okay,
up.
Yeah, it's a cute movie.
Fuck you. Fuck, suck my dick. It's cute.
I would like to say 10 things I hate about you right now.
Oh, I love that one.
No. I didn't mean movie.
I always thought that Hitler should have titled Mein Kampf 10 Things I Hate About Jews.
Well, then they couldn't have called that movie that.
Good point.
Yeah, man. It would have had to be called something else like Othello or something.
Fuck. I hope whoever shit their pants when I said 10 things I hate about you while listening to the podcast.
You think at least one person shit their pants?
One person shit
you
their pants.
You got a lot of faith. Oh, fuck it.
Faith
dude.
No more, Dave.
That were, this is the third time this episode I wish I was dead.
That's really basically what the whole pod's about.
Totally. Let's talk about Freddie Prinze.
Yeah, I actually don't know much about him.
Okay, yeah. Both his life and his suicide and everything surrounding it are interesting. I'm going to sort of like tell a story backwards in a certain sense. I'll just tell you... He was 22 years old when he killed himself. He was born June 22nd, 1954. He killed himself January 28th, 1977.
Wow, that's so young.
And I want to give you a really quick... Because here's the thing. He was very young when he committed suicide. But also, his rise to fame was incredibly quick. He wasn't a child actor. So, like, the speed with which his... career and then death happened is like absolutely unprecedented.
Wow, wow.
So I want to really, really quick roll through like a bunch of dates just to give you an idea of how quick it was.
Oh my God.
So 1973, he was on The Tonight Show for the first time. 1974, he got his role on Chico the Man. Huh. 1975, put out his first album. 1976, signed a deal with NBC. 1977, killed himself.
So inside like 4 years?
Yeah.
Like, holy fuck,
dude. Totally. And Chico and the Man was the thing that blew him up. And before that, he was just doing stand-up.
Imagine any of our friends, like, after, like, say, Alan Strickland Williams, like, our good friend, like, got, like, Conan. He just, like...
blew his brains out.
You know, like, went on the road, got a little bit of cred, and then, like, fucking, you know, like, killed himself. Like, that would be the level of just, like...
Yeah, totally, man.
That sucks.
I mean, it honestly would be, like, there are people we know who have had that kind of skyrocket to fame.
Dude, I'm currently living it.
Yeah, I mean, Hampton... It would be, like, if Hampton, after...
No, I mean, like, I really empathize with this. It's like, my career is, like, in the shitter.
That's not true.
Hardcore, yes.
No, really? Is that how you feel?
Yeah, and I'm trying not to be too despondent about it, but it's like, and at the end of the day, it's always up to me. Like, same as it's always been, but it's like, It's like, what the fuck am I going to do? You know, like,
you know what, man? I dated this girl who, for a while, we didn't date too long, but one of the things I remember she said to me, it was early on in comedy, and I was like 3 years in, 2 or 3 years into stand up, and I had like a sort of an early first getting recognized. You know, like when you get funny and everyone notices.
Yes.
Every comedian has that first period of time they happen. You remember it like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. That happened for me like 9 months or a year in or something. And I was like the golden boy. I got on all the shows. I did fucking Bridgetown when I was like a year and a half in and stuff.
Sure. Wow.
And then when I was like 2.5, 3 years in, everything got hard. No one gave a shit. And I was like, what is happening? I'm fucked. Right. And this girl,
it's an ebb and flow for sure. Yeah.
It's an ebb and flow. But what this girl said was, she was like, you know, I think the comedians that are happiest are the ones that just know they're not always going to be cool.
Yeah.
And can sort of maintain a level of awareness of that and happiness while they're not cool. And the reality is, you're super good at stand-up and you have credits and people respect you and you're in a period after a bubble for you.
Sure.
And it sucks, man. I was just talking to Kyle Ayers about this today. A lot of my friends are in this place. I feel like I'm kind of there, too.
It's kind of happening. There's like just a wave, I think, of depression almost hitting comics because
it's also
a lot
like
of venues have closed. A lot of opportunities have kind of suddenly stopped. At Midnight's gone, baby.
But also, there's just like a certain, there's like a certain style of comedy and a certain style of person and way of acting that is being evangelized right now, and it's not us. And it'll come back around. I really believe that. So it just always, the reason I think it is really fucked now for people like you, me, and Kyle and our close friends is we have experienced some success and one of those like career excitement bubbles, but also we still haven't gotten far enough along to have money. So we're in a dip, we're not cool, and we're broke.
Wait, being broke's not cool?
It's
I
also,
thought this was pretty cool.
I should also clarify if you're listening, because people have corrected me on this word a lot when I talk about this. I don't mean cool in the sense of a cool person. I hope you know what I mean. Cool to the industry. You know what I mean?
Oh.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't all of a sudden become just pieces of shit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm usually able to get myself out of like career depression, like, you know, relatively. I've been doing this long enough, same as you, like where we've seen like ebb and flow.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so I think it's easy to like get out of it. But also like what's interesting with like Freddie Prinze is like he's like the boom of stand-up. Like, this was the fucking gold rush. The beginning of the gold rush was when The Tonight Show moved out to Burbank, and suddenly L.A. was the hot spot for comedy. And you know what's funny? I was talking with Georgia, my girlfriend, the other day, and she's about to record an album and everything, and we're talking about stand-up, and, like, you know, I think something we just kind of brought up is, like, there's always been too many stand-ups.
Yeah.
Like, that's the problem with stand-up. There's always been too many. So, of course, no one's getting paid right.
Right.
It's like, when there was the first club, there was, like, 200 stand-ups in New York, or even 100. That's already too many for the one improv, the one club, the first club. So, that's been trickled down throughout the industry. Is there's just too many people who think they're fucking funny.
Totally.
And you need to get the fuck out of my way, Dave.
Well, and here's the other thing. I mean, we've talked about, like, you know, like, your problem with your own drinking on this show. Mm-hmm. And, like, my problem with, like, extreme depression and anxiety and stuff. And it's funny. This story about Freddie Prinze is, like, really telling about that through line. It's funny to say that because I literally just said you don't have to be depressed to be a comedian, but there is an obvious connection.
It's just a depressing business.
Yeah.
So going from there,
So real quick, his early life. His real name is actually Frederick Carl Prutzel.
Oh, what a fraud.
Yeah, what a dick, right?
Exposed.
Yeah.
TMZ, exposed.
And apparently he changed his name to Prinze. Because he discovered he wanted to be an entertainer and he felt like that was an easier thing to say. But there was a comedian named Alan King, and Freddie Prinze apparently would joke all the time that he wanted to be the king of comedy, but that was taken by Alan King, so he changed it to Prinze because it's like Prince.
Swish.
Do you hate Freddie Prinze now?
Swish.
Yeah, way to go, bro.
Honestly, but isn't it so funny with like Bill O'Reilly like trying to expose like Jon Stewart is like, isn't your real name John Leibowitz? Like, it's like actors can just, I should have changed my name year one. You're right. My name is fucking stupid.
Yeah, dude.
I have to always correct people. I'm like, no, no, it's...
Should have changed it to Wanda Sykes. She's huge, man. Imagine if that was you.
I'm going to change my name to Chris Rock Killing on Stage. Full sentence.
You change your name to... You just change your name to Timothy McVeigh. Oh, man. Okay, so... Frederick Carl Prutzel, his mom's Puerto Rican, his dad is a German immigrant, and he was raised by them in Washington Heights in New York City.
Oh, Carlos Mencia.
Really early on, his mom put him in ballet class. That's how he started as a performer.
Oh, cool.
And then he liked it a lot. And then, and from that, he got into a performing arts high school, and there he sort of discovered that he liked to act and stuff, and he literally dropped out of high school when he was 16 or 17 to... Hold on.
No, I just got an anecdote. Yeah, yeah.
Dropped out of high school at 16 or 17 to pursue stand-up. So he started that young. Yeah.
When I was a kid, I lived in a very small town. And, like, I kind of started to be interested in acting or comedy. Like, definitely I was, like, a very performative kid. Like, I would, like, stop the whole family and be like, I'm going to do, like, a Beetlejuice impression. Like, check it out. Like,
wow,
the lamest shit.
That's cool.
So, like, my parents were like, okay, this kid likes acting or some shit like that. And but there was nothing really in the town. So, like, they signed me up for an acting class, and it's with all these other kids, and then I show up, and then it's like, it's actually dancing. Like,
oh,
was
weird.
The thing. And I was just like... so embarrassed. Like, I couldn't do it. Like, they were like, well, do the moves. Like, everyone's gonna learn these simple moves. And I was like, I'm in the wrong place. Like, I don't want to do this. I want to act. I don't want to dance. Like, I was like drawing a line in the effeminate. Like,
oh, really?
Zone it was of, like, I was like, I wanna act. I don't want to dance. Please.
It was like masculine panic.
Please. Yeah, exactly.
That's funny.
I had like fucking crazy masculine panic.
Wow.
During that episode. Yeah.
Well, you know that every dude has that. You have to like work it out of your brain.
I was a little kid. Yeah, yeah. I was like 10 or some shit.
So yeah. Wow.
Like, I mean, that's as young as it gets.
Well, apparently Freddie Prinze loved ballet, and he loved acting so much that he quit high school to pursue stand-up, which is, I don't know, just that fact alone makes me think that, like, this guy's kind of nuts.
Yeah. Wait, to pursue stand-up?
Yeah, like, I don't need 11th grade.
Wow, so he must and also, there's no stand-up industry. It's not like, yeah, and eventually I'll tour all the improvs across America. Like,
right.
Those don't even exist yet.
Well, he was just in New York, and I mean, he started doing stand up.
Damn.
When he was
Catch a Rising Star,
I believe, when he was 16.
Yeah,
I think that's right. It might have even been 14 or 15.
Chappelle,
but yeah,
did that shit
he like
too.
Super quickly was going up at the Improv and Catch a Rising Star in New York, like all the fucking time.
What a cool dude.
I mean, so if you're like a 16-year-old kid. And you're going up at the two best clubs in the world, perhaps
the only,
two.
Yeah,
like, you're just like, whatever, dude, this is perfect. They pay me $5,000 a day or whatever they paid. That's how much money it would seem like to a high school kid,
Back in the day, you do the two spots, you make $5,000 a day, and you do a line of coke on the A train.
Man.
That's actually a perfect segue into another reality about him, which is he got into coke super early on.
Wow.
He got into coke so early on in his life that by 16 he had a heavy regular coke habit. Wow. Yeah. Which, you know, again,
everyone did. Like, I'm not I know.
Yeah, you're right. No, every 16-year-old did. You're right.
No, I'm definitely like exaggerating, but like stand-up was like, I mean, like, you could probably count on one finger the number of stand-ups who didn't do coke at that time.
Well, especially back then, right?
At that time,
yeah, that's funny to think. I mean, what's weird is this is long enough ago that it took, like, some deep digging to get even surface-level facts on this.
Oh, yeah. I know. It's hard to...
People
aren't...
The 70s aren't there's not a massive presence of the history of the 70s on the internet, which is so funny.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, I was busy fucking. I don't know what's
But so yeah, some of this is going to be guessing, but if I think about it, like, so this kid goes to performing arts high school, realizes he wants to do stand up when he's in like 9th or 10th grade. Hmm. So he starts building a stand up routine, going to clubs probably. It sounds like he just didn't really listen to his parents a lot because sure. he signed up for performing arts high school without telling them.
Whoa.
Yeah. They just sent him to ballet classes and he loved it. And he was like, oh shit, I'm going to try to do this forever. And him to a high school without asking them if he could. And so, yeah, in his teens, he starts going to comedy clubs. And I wonder if the comics at those clubs are the reason he got into coke as a teenager, or was it at his performing arts high school? Probably the comics, right?
Probably the comics, dude. Yeah, for being like completely honest.
Sam Kinison killed Freddie Prinze.
Well, also, like, something very culturally like interesting about cocaine is at that time, like, there was very few ODs that were even like public record. Like,
oh wow,
it wasn't like a highly publicized thing of like, you do coke, you might die. Yeah. It was like, this is the new cool party drug, and it was innocent. Like, literally, people would do it all the time, and every station of society would be snorting coke, and it just wasn't like, oh, you could like OD on this.
Yeah,
because it got then they started cutting it with shit. Started getting stronger, and then also like just party culture when you're mixing it with booze and shit, like it's gonna get way worse and you're gonna be doing way more and everything, and like, yeah, then you started to see like the public deaths, the ODs,
right,
started
okay.
emerging, you know. But I mean, up until then, it was like, that dude just cool.
Right.
I don't know.
We all have it. It might have even been cheaper back then. Who knows?
Yeah. I don't know what to compare it to, because now I feel like the cultural knowledge about drugs is like, it's deeper. It's like,
so broad. Yeah.
People know about meth.
And it's thrown in your face. I mean, there's drug programs in middle schools.
Yeah. It's like, there's no reason you should know about meth. That's almost never coming into your orbit. Like, that's trucker speed. Like, there's,
totally. And there are like billboards of people with like no teeth and a destroyed face. And like, that's how I found out about meth. When I was a kid, I was like, what the fuck is that?
But now I know about so many drugs. I know about what they can do. Because
you sell them.
Yeah. Because I'm a DARE instructor.
Who sells drugs?
Hey, kids, I dare you to do drugs.
Yeah. Dare to buy Molly from me.
Officer Cool, I dare you to do it.
Hi, I'm Officer Cool, and I sell Molly. I want to start getting into the timeline of his career and toward the end of his life. But before I do want to talk about him as a comedian real quick, because this... I found this fact about him that I love so much that I didn't know. First of all, he really did like pop right away as a teenager. Hmm. He just basically walked into a comedy club, did one set, and they were like, what the fuck? This guy must have been like the funniest guy on earth.
Somebody who was actually intuitively good at stand-up at a young age, especially when stand-up's just blowing up. Like, they're like, how the fuck is this kid doing this?
Totally. But here's the thing.
And
one
it
of his
was so
bits,
easy back then.
One of his signature bits that it seems like he did all the time on stage was that he told audiences that he was a Hungarian, half Hungarian, half Puerto Rican. But he wasn't even Hungarian. He was just German. He just thought Hungarian sounded better. Yeah. So the reason I love fact...
I'm like punching a wall in my brain right now.
Well, the reason I love that fact so much is like...
Oh, my God.
That must have... Things like that probably just have not been done that much. But to hear that in 1972... Freddie Prinze was saying Hungarian, and we still have comedians doing that shit now today. The Metro Jethro and the Red Mexican and stuff, like, there's so much of it.
Hey, that's a good point.
Yeah. We're still, I mean,
hacks still
exist.
As
I was reading about Freddie Prinze, I was like, man, I think I'm supposed to look up to this guy.
Dude, the number one stand-up in America is a ventriloquist.
Yeah, Donald Trump.
Like, I don't know. Like, that apparently was a thing back in the early advent of radio. Like, one of the biggest radio stars was a ventriloquist.
Really?
Which must have been, like, stupefying to people because they're like, I can't even see the puppets. And he's, what? Okay, he's on the radio. Like, it doesn't fucking matter if he's a
French.
He just does voices. So, like, that was, like, the highest paid performer for a while in radio.
Wow.
And I feel like, and that happens again with stand-up. It's just like, I don't know. I mean, we've already talked about Lena Dunham's father, Jeff Dunham, and like all the terrible shit he's done to society and all those people he's molested. But, you know, but I just want to go on the record and say he's a monster. And
Jeff Dunham?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Total monster.
Oh, wow.
And then
I don't really
and
know
then the fucking...
if I can keep being friends with you if that's how you feel.
And then I still believe the largest comedian in the world is still Russell Peters.
Yeah, right. Totally.
The guy who just points at the crowd is like, so what are you, like Mexican? What are you Puerto Rican? What are you, like Libyan? What are you? He just points to different people, guesses their ethnicities for like a whole arena.
There was a while where Larry the Cable Guy overtook him. For sure.
He was, internationally, though?
Yeah. He was the highest paid.
Whoa.
He was the highest paid touring comedian in the world for a couple years.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn. Y'all ever shit a fuck?
Yeah.
Y'all ever fuck your shit?
That's funny. That's literally something I say in my stand-up now. Making fun of those people.
Anyway, I mean, I know it's easy targets to make fun of fucking, you know, Russell Peters and Larry.
Dude, saying y'all ever fuck your shit on stage is the most fun I've ever had.
Why am I not more popular? I mean, so, yeah, he's starting, Freddie Prinze is starting out in the early days, the real, like, Wild West of stand-up, where it was like, no one, like, hack wasn't even a thing.
Totally.
It was just like, can you do this?
At all.
Can people laugh at you, and you're not doing pre-written jokes that are, like, vaudeville style?
Well, this is why it doesn't bother me that he's the Hunger Rican. Because it's, like, the...
Like, yeah.
The comedy scene is in the baby stages, you know? So, like... He has no frame of reference. These things are like new to everyone. I cut people a break who are at the cusp of things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like in a void, you know, you're going to write hack shit.
Totally. 40 years from now, people will think our stand-up is hack as shit.
I remember like
they just will.
I approached a stand-up early on and was like, so like this is like year one. And I was like, what about this bit? I was just like, oh, you know, I was Catholic, but no one ever molested me. And I feel like, you know, sad that no one ever like found me attractive. And he was like, just so you know, like a lot of people have that. And it's very hack. Like, and I was like, cool. Like I literally had no idea.
Yeah.
I thought that was brilliant. I thought I'd come up with the whole concept, you know?
Yeah. Except for the difference in between that and the situation with Freddie Prinze is Freddie Prinze walked up to a comic and said that. And they were like, you're a genius. I haven't heard anything like that before in my entire fucking life. And audiences were like, I agree with you. This guy is incredible. Put him on TV.
The difference is when I went up on stage and said, I'm a Hunger Rican, everyone booed me and started tar and feathering me.
And you were like, what? I'm Puerto Rican and I'm hungry.
I'm hungry.
That's even worse. That's way worse than being Hungarian and Puerto Rican.
Hunger Rican. man, it's so shitty. It's
so like
funny.
I said, he performed at the Improv and Catch a Rising Star in New York a lot. The first time he was ever on TV, he was 18 years old in early 1973. It was on Jack Parr Tonight. And then...
Oh, yeah.
And then later that year, same year, 1973, 19 years old, dude, he was on The Tonight Show for the first time
with
doing
Jimmy
stand-up.
With Jimmy Fallon?
With Jimmy Fallon.
Did he do karaoke?
And dude, at 19, his first time on The Tonight Show, Carson loved him so much that he asked him to come over and sit on the couch. Ugh. And it was the first time in Tonight Show history that the host asked a first-time performer to come to the couch.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow.
He was the first ever.
Wow.
They had like... You know, long-time performers that they would come, but it was booked. It was
the
first.
You'd always hear about the Carson giving the okay. You know,
it was
like,
the first unbooked couch ask. Yeah, totally.
Sit your ass down. You're famous now.
Yeah, that's what we said. Sit the fuck down.
Sit the fuck down.
Hungry man.
There's a couple.
Heard you're hungry.
It's weird how The Tonight Show had this magic power. Like when it moved to Burbank, it definitely like shifted the scene of comedy. But also like. There's a bunch of comics who have stories where they're like, yeah, I did the Tonight Show 9 times. No one knew who I was. But like Drew Carey is like, I did the Tonight Show. The next day, my life completely changed. Like sometimes a thing would just hit, like Roseanne, like Ellen DeGeneres. Like there's certain people who like it fucking blew up. But I've seen so I like get really into like finding obscure acts and shit. So like I've seen so many Tonight Show acts that like you've never like no one's ever seen. Did it like 5 times. Just
yeah, there's
averagely
this dude,
good.
When I was like young in stand up, there was this guy who came to my open mic who. I just started talking to him. He was much older, and he just dropped on me at some point. He was like, yeah, but I'm Tonight Show a bunch of times. And I was like, what the fuck? And he was like, and he literally just goes, oh yeah, man, you don't understand. I was one of the first comedians.
Oh my God.
And so me and Rich Scheidner and Freddie Prinze, we all got to fucking, I guess Rich is a little later.
He's one of Jeff Dunham's puppets. He's like, I'm the dead terrorist, dude. I started comedy.
Yeah, he was just like, yeah, I know Freddie Prinze. We were friends.
That's fucking insane.
Every single one of us did The Tonight Show like 10 times.
But I've also seen like comics like that too. It's so weird. There's
so
many.
Well, if you think about what I just said is, that guy had done The Tonight Show 10 times and knew all those guys, and he was at my fucking open mic. You know, you know what I mean?
And like, he could not get a spot.
He sucked. He was,
I imagine so, dude. There literally is a reason, you know, at a certain point, it's like, well, maybe you just weren't that good. And
he wasn't that good.
Changes.
But if you weren't good, you could get on The Tonight Show.
So
how fucking
so
insane
hard.
Is that? Man.
Okay. I know. It was a fucked up fucking industry for so long.
So 19 years old, 1973, first Tonight Show appearance. Carson, again, loved him so much that he went to go on The Tonight Show a bunch of times, and he later even guest hosted The Tonight Show when Carson was off. Yeah. Then 1974, the guy is 20 years old. He books his role on Chico the Man as Chico.
Chico and the Man, yeah.
Yeah. Chico and the Man was
never
like
seen it.
I've never seen it either.
I do not know what it looks like.
I don't know either.
I've
I mean,
heard
I've
it said a million
screenshots,
times.
Screenshots.
Oh, yeah?
But I have no idea. But, yeah, that show was already a big show, and then he was made, like, the supporting character, the friend of the main character. Hmm. And he was just, like, immediately loved way more than the main character, and it blew the show up even more. And then at 20
shit.
Years old, he was, like, the most famous comedian on
Kinda
Earth.
Kind of like in Green Hornet when fucking Kato was Bruce Lee. Like, Green Hornet was
a TV
show, and Bruce Lee was fucking the sidekick.
Yeah.
But, like, he was so incredible. Everyone was like, what the fuck is this guy doing? Like, it's amazing. Like,
yeah.
It's Bruce Lee. Like,
dude, so crazy.
It became so huge.
Yeah, and from there he just blew up. I'm just trying to let it sink in that he was 20. He was 20.
That's
and he was
crazy.
Like Kanye. He was Kanye. I mean, he's huge. I mean, probably not Kanye.
Initial Kanye. when Kanye blew up, Kanye?
More like Meek Mill.
Okay. You have never sounded older.
Meek Mill. A little bit of a Meek
you
Mill.
Kids like the Meek Mill?
Yeah.
I used to work at the Meek Mill.
This was an interesting thing about him on Chico.
Ugh, I doubt it.
Okay. Fine, man. Wow. No, it's fine. I'll just stop, I guess. No. This is true. His catchphrase on Chico and the Man was, do you know this? Do you know what it is?
I'm trying. Go. What is it?
He's not my job. And I, he's not my job. I'm sorry I'm doing that accent. I'm so sorry.
I'm so sleepy.
I'm trying to, exactly.
that was his catchphrase. I'm so sleepy. He's not my job. I'm so sleepy.
And
Jesus Christ.
I didn't even realize that in the 70s a lot of shit like this happened, but I should have realized. There were crazy protests from the Hispanic community about this show.
Oh, really?
And about him. Yeah, they were like, fuck you, you're racist against your own people. Also, but not really his own people, because he's Puerto Rican and the character in the show was Hispano, so Mexican American. So he's like a Puerto Rican guy shitting on Mexicans.
That's hysterical.
Yeah, man.
Wow, that's incredibly woke. Like, of the time for them
exactly.
to be that like specific.
I guess I didn't realize there was like an organized Hispanic American activist community. It's cool.
Meanwhile, there's like shows like The Jeffersons and All in the Family where they're just like, shut the fuck up, whitey. Like the racial like shit that's going on these shows is like so volatile. That's so funny, man.
And despite that, he was like, he was literally so big that he performed on the celebrity roast of Sammy Davis Jr. and Muhammad Ali.
I think I've seen that. Yeah, yeah.
He also, in 75, he put out his first and only stand-up album, Looking Good. And then in 1976, he literally signed a $6 million holding deal with NBC.
I'm so mad. Yeah. Dude, remember, man, comedy.
And he was 21 at that time.
For reference and for people in, about comedy, like there was like, it's been like a couple gold rushes every now and then.
Yeah.
And one thing that was still happening up until about 15 years ago, maybe a little bit less than that, was like there was the Aspen Comedy Festival,
right,
which is a big thing. And like networks would just write holding deals for comics. Like I think Zach Galifianakis and like Mike Birbiglia are like some of the last like bigger names to get these kinds of things.
Gerard Carmichael got one. I do know that.
A company would just be like, we just like the idea of you. Any projects you got, they're for us, and here's $1 million. And it's like, you know, I'm sure a lot of that goes to taxes and your manager.
Well, you get it over time.
But like, it's like
Freddie Prinze's deal was $6 million over 5 years.
No one does that shit anymore.
But no one does it anymore.
Yeah. It's just they're now the industry is like, are you worth $6 million already? Maybe we'll give you $1 million. Like, are you already huge and successful?
Totally.
Well, now we'll work with you. Like, that makes sense.
Freddie Prinze was so big that he performed, he did stand up at the inaugural ball of Jimmy Carter.
What?
And what's so crazy is you were talking about the Jeffersons and shit. You know what the two stand-ups who performed at the show were? Freddie Prinze and Red Fox.
Fuck yes!
Dude, how cool is that?
Dude, Red Fox is the coolest.
He's so funny.
He's the fucking funniest, dude. That dude fucking invented stand-up.
Yeah, and he still holds up, I think.
He absolutely holds up. I mean, he's like raw and fucking,
I mean, he's
you
nuts.
Know, dirty as shit and like, you know, inappropriate, but
yeah,
it's like,
racist, you know.
But it's like, nah, but like, yeah, like he really was at like the cutting edge of like,
totally,
here's what stand up should be, basically.
You also, know? You know, I feel like it's okay for a black man in the 70s to be racist. I don't know, maybe not.
No,
probably not. I don't know.
I wasn't talking about the racist thing, but he's definitely misogynistic as fuck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Eat my pussy, bitch.
God damn, I know.
Eat my dick's pussy.
So, okay. That's his career. I want to go through like how he led his life a little bit leading into his suicide. Because like if you think about all that incredible rise to fame, literally at 22 years old. At 22 years old, performing at the presidential inaugural ball.
Crazy.
After having gotten your first TV show at 20. So like I said, he got really into drugs when he was in high school. By 16, he was a cocaine user. Pretty quickly after that, he got really into Quaaludes. And then when he was on Chico and the Man, he literally had a 5 gram of cocaine a day habit. 5 gram a day cocaine habit.
How much? Like
an 8-ball is 3.5 grams.
Damn.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, man. 8.5 balls a day, dude.
I mean, he was living it.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, the lewds are the other also huge part of that. I mean, it's like cocaine, it will fuck you up. It'll make you like super crazy. But when you combine it with other stuff, especially, is when it becomes really deadly.
Absolutely.
Like, it's already, like, making your heart go.
Well, when you know
really
he
fast.
Was drinking, he was definitely drinking this entire time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, totally. So, and that always makes everything worse.
Every fuck-up comedian I've ever talked to about, like, coke, where they're like, yeah, I love coke and everything. Like, they're always like, it just makes the drinking so much easier.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
it's like,
totally.
Oh, cool.
That's so knowing that he's a big cocaine, quaalude, and drinking guy, wow. He had, I'll call them hobbies. Let's see, he had 3 big hobbies. And I'll just go through them.
Oh, shit.
The first hobby is
Chico and the Man.
That's 4.
That's 4.
The first one is driving fast. Like, literally, so into driving fast that he would go, like, come up on a school zone and they'd be like, oh, fuck yeah. And go like 90 through a school zone. He would get fucked up on Quaaludes.
Just drive, Fast and the Furious-ing it.
Yeah, drive drunk, fucked up on Quaaludes and cocaine, and speed as much as he could. He did that all the time.
The 70s were the best. And like a cop would pull you over and be like, coke and speeding. All right, get home quick.
The other thing he really, the second thing he really loved to do, and I'm not kidding, he did this all the time, was watch the Zapruder film. He loved to watch the Zapruder film.
I love this dude. This we could have fucking hung out.
I know.
Absolutely. Are you kidding me?
What a fucking crazy, hilarious
Zapruder footage.
Yeah, which is, if I'm sure you know what it is, but if you don't, it's the footage of JFK getting shot. Isn't it? It is, right?
Oh yeah. Get to see the wife scoop up brains and shit. It's
crazy.
It's fucking awful. It's so horrifying.
So the last thing that Al...
his hobby.
Yeah. I don't think he called it a hobby, but he did it all the time.
You want to come to my house? I'm going to watch the president have his brains explode out the back of his head. I'm cool.
Another thing that he did literally all the time was in front of his friends to fuck with them and freak them out, he would just play Russian roulette with himself. Like, two people being like, stop it, dude. What the fuck, man? Stop. And he apparently like...
No, this is like the new board game everyone's doing. It's Russian
and sometimes,
roulette.
Obviously, people wouldn't believe him because who would think a person's that crazy? And there's a story of apparently one time he was like in front of a bunch of his friends.
Oh, my God.
And he took out a gun and he put it to his temple. And they're like, don't. This is not funny. And he pulls the trigger and click. And they're like, okay, there's no bullets. And then he just pointed it out the window and fired. And the next bullet was a bullet. The next chamber had a bullet in it, dude.
Wow.
And it was such a powerful gun that it knocked him on the floor. Like,
dude, I only play Russian roulette, you know, on God mode. Every chamber loaded, dude.
Also,
every
the fact that
chamber.
The well, God mode.
Six times, dude. You got to shoot yourself in the head six times.
I was also thinking about it. Like, the type of gun where you're just holding it up and it, like, it's so powerful that it knocks you back.
Yeah.
It's a big fucking. He has, like, a magnum, dude, that he's just, like, playing Russian roulette with.
45 caliber is really fucking strong.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I don't know anything about guns.
I don't know. Like, no, but, like, you'd be. Like, here's what's crazy about fucking caliber of guns, like shit, like 45, if you just get shot with that, you'll go into shock and die if it hits any part of your body.
Really?
Yeah, like they're powerful as fuck. Like,
wow.
So the only thing that you could get shot with and not probably go into shock would be a 22. You gotta
and
go,
that's like what a Glock is, right?
A 22 is like a
it's like a
revolver. Yeah, like,
yeah,
you know. Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, they really like fuck people up. People don't understand. There was that fucking NFL player like shot himself in the fucking leg. Like he died. Like you just like it. Your body doesn't know how to react to that amount of flesh getting taken away.
Right.
Like all those nerves getting, you know, like destroyed.
Right. Wow.
Wow, that's fucked up, man. He was just like...
He's a crazy motherfucker,
having fun
dude.
With guns.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, being cool.
And I think probably a given throughout this is that he was also, like, all about women. He was, like, having the most sex.
He's also, like, a comedy store guy at this point, right? Or, like, did he move out to L.A.?
No, he was in New York the whole time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, all these dark stories you usually hear associated with the comedy
in LA.
Store. Like, well, the comedy store has, like... I remember the first couple of nights I even went there, they were like, yeah, somebody one time like fired off.
I'm sorry. You're right. He did move to L.A.
Yeah, he moved to L.A.
Yeah, that was... Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there were stories about like, you know, the comedy store at that time is like everyone's doing coke, people bringing guns to the club. Like there's stories like where it's like, yes, a comic shot a bullet into this wall right here.
Right,
and like
yeah.
That guy jumped off the roof off this hotel right next to the comedy store. And it's like, that's all that fucking show I'm dying up here.
Oh yeah,
it's about which it's.
I mean, that is one of the fun things about being in the comedy store. There's all these crazy stories about like, Sam Kinison used to blow lines in this room and stuff, and like
it never ends.
Half of me is always like, "That's so fucking cool to know that fact," and the other half is like, "What a this is ridiculous!" Like, comics were monsters.
Exactly. It's like, what adult playground bullshit is this?
Yeah, totally.
Like, can you all calm down? It's just comedy. It's not like I'm dealing with the devil in my brain.
Yeah, totally.
Here's me! Balls me! I mean, like, really, it's like, it's just telling jokes, you fucking monster. Like, can everyone calm down?
Freddie Prinze actually, he settled down from running around and hooking up with a bunch of women in 1975. He married a woman named Kathy Cochran, October. October. It's the 13th month. He and Kathy got married October 13th, 1975. Then on March 8th, 1976, their only child was born, and that is Freddie Prinze Jr.
Wing Commander.
Then later that year, not even a year later, like he's got a kid who's 9 months old. November 16th, 1976, he gets arrested for driving under the influence of Quaaludes. And like 3 weeks after that, his wife files for a divorce.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Honestly, I know it sounds weird, but like I just am thinking about Freddie Prinze Jr. And I'm like,
yeah,
what a remarkably well-adjusted guy.
No shit.
I'm sure there's a lot of like maybe depression behind closed doors, but like... What it's insane.
Publicly also insane. Openly like really adores his father.
Yeah, yeah,
which
he
I
does.
Think is really interesting
sweet.
Too.
Very sweet.
Yeah, totally. So like once his wife files for divorce is the beginning of the end. Like I said, that's damn. Nearing the end of 1976, and he loved his kid so much, or he said that. He literally said that the divorce.
He said it.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. The reason I clarified is. He said it, and he probably meant it when he said it, but he was also getting fucked up on Quaaludes yeah. and driving his car and getting arrested. You know what I mean?
Which kind of leads to the depression, honestly. Like right. when you're dealing with like addiction that hard and everything, like certainly a thought is like, why am I such a fucking piece of shit?
Yeah.
Why am I ruining everyone's lives around me?
Totally.
And why am I such a like a bad and that void in turn of feelings? You know,
will can make the drug abuse even worse, take yeah. you even deeper into addiction.
I mean, that's why people always like talk about it like spiraling.
Yeah,
you know, it's like because it literally is like a drain going. It just accumulates on itself and just compounds on itself and gets harder yeah. and harder. So you know, you really got to have like. Good people around you, which I'm sure wasn't happening in the 70s with comics. They're like,
well, you know what?
Just do a little bit less coke.
Right.
Maybe do more coke. Ooh, what?
Yeah. That'll zero out the coke.
Yeah.
I will say this. He was open about having depression. I don't know if he was diagnosed or if he yeah. just realized it himself, but he went to a psychiatrist regularly. He had a personal psychiatrist who wow. was like sort of even on call. Not on call, but like... I think was very concerned.
I'm sure.
And would like come a running. You know what I mean?
As concerned as they probably would be at the time. Yeah.
And so, yeah, Freddie Prinze said that once his wife filed for divorce, it crushed him. First of all, he loved her so much and would miss her. But also, he was really fucking terrified that he was going to lose his son forever and never be able to see him again.
God, that sucks.
So that happens in November of 1976. Then, dude... January 20th, 1977, he performs at the inaugural ball of Jimmy Carter.
For Jimmy Farter? The party starter?
Yeah, Jimmy Carter, the party starter.
Jimmy Carter, the party starter? Cool, dude. Honestly, Jimmy Carter, maybe one of my favorite presidents ever.
Oh, no shit. He's great, man.
He's, like, amazing.
He's out there building homes and shit, and, like...
I think he was one term also. Like, people yeah. really shit on him. They were like, this guy's not doing anything. It's like... It's like, what do you want? Like, what do you want him to do?
If there's just ever proof that someone...
America.
You, like, why... I think the best tell of if a president had good intentions is what they do immediately after.
Absolutely.
And he's
right?
like the only one who was I still want to help.
Yeah, yeah. You think like Trump's going to be doing like Habitat for Humanity?
No
like,
way.
Tapping nails into walls. This is going to be the best drywall I've
yeah,
ever put
totally.
Up.
I hammer nails in stronger than everyone else, faster, stronger and faster than
I'm
everyone.
I'm going to pour out soup for the homeless. It's going to be the best soup they've
Even
ever
Barack
had.
Even Barack Obama's like, I want to be on Netflix.
Dude, as much as I loved Obama at the time, man, that guy like fucking betrayed us.
That Netflix thing bummed me out.
It's like shit. Like the minute he's done being president, Obama, he's all of a sudden hanging out with like... The Virgin Air guy.
Yeah.
He's hanging out with Richard Branson. He's like just doing like parasailing with billionaires.
Yeah.
Like suddenly it's just like, and then like no sign. Like, he's not talking about shit. Like, he didn't care. Like, he got really defeated. Plus, like, a lot of shit he did while he was president was really suspect. Yeah. It was like, if anything, he was a centrist. Like, as much as, like, I'm like, oh, I'm a liberal and I identify with him as being a liberal, everything he did was centrist.
Totally.
He totally acquiesced to the Republican Party and, like, made it like, what do you guys want? Okay, well, let's find like a middle road. And then like lost the Senate. You know, it's like the guy's a fucking like.
Which would be fine if that was what presidents did. But now we have Trump who won't do that to save his fucking life. Okay, so yeah. January 20, 1976, inaugural ball for the president.
Jimmy Carter farter
started. No, that was January 20th. Then 6 days later, his wife files for a restraining order against him.
Oh.
I could not find what happened, but I'll tell you, that makes me think that there's also maybe some type of like verbal abuse or like...
yeah.
Especially, I mean, not necessarily. Well, it could have just been like, you won't quit Quaaludes and you won't stop calling me.
Absolutely. But I will
seems
say...
seems like it's bad if there's a restraining order.
It's like what we know, say, of like addicts and shit. Like, if you're doing that level, you're probably not like being the most chill dude ever.
Right.
And also, given the like environment of society at the time, like, it wouldn't be at all weird if that dude was screaming at his woman and like was treating her completely.
Oh yeah,
like
we were still fully in woman listens to man mode in the 70s.
Yeah.
And he was raised like that, and yeah, he's on coke all the time. I'm sure he's freaking out all the
time. He's also a fucking young dude who doesn't know anything.
Yeah, exactly. He's 22 years old.
Doesn't know shit. He's fucking around comics all the time.
22. He just performed for the president, and his and then his wife doesn't want to see him. The emotional ups and downs of that. How do you process those two pieces of information? The president likes me. My wife hates me. That's and you're on coke and you're 22.
His material that night was all, y'all ever be president and hate your wife?
Yes.
Woo! And like Jimmy Carter's like, yeah! Hell yeah!
Eisenhower's like, yes. Yes,
absolutely.
I do.
Oh, God, dude. Yeah, I hear what you mean, man. Especially like the emotional like swings. Like, I've felt this with just anything I've done in my career, and it's a problem that I've had to like learn how to deal with. But it was like the emotional upswing of positive things happening. Like, if I ever did a TV set or whatever, like, immediately I'd have to like go to my hotel room and cry, like just sob, because I didn't
level it out.
I didn't understand like a good thing happening to me.
Yeah,
like it didn't. I don't know how to process it the same. And over time, I've kind of like,
you're always looking for the dark side of the moon.
Yeah, I'm always looking for Laser Floyd. Hell yeah, dude. So I just realized what an upswing of emotion that is. And dude, if you're a coke head and you're already, say, like dealing with depression, like your emotions are just like going up and down off the fucking rails.
Yeah.
So, and dealing with a divorce. I mean, this guy, dealing with this guy's like a ticking time bomb.
He's missing his kid, and then she files a restraining order. So the day after she files a restraining order, he basically like flips out. The day after he files a restraining order, he just starts making all these phone calls. The first thing he did was he called his psychiatrist and his personal secretary and told them he was going to kill himself. So they come over to where he lives. They come over to his apartment and they plead with him not to. And it seems like they've convinced him not to, right? Then he calls his business manager. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I left out one detail. He's then alone for a bit. Oh. And I think starts to freak out again and just fires his gun at his medicine cabinet.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
He's just Elvising shit like in his apartment. That's
so cool. Then 2:45 a.m. that night. So 2:45 a.m. January 28th, 1977. He calls his business manager, tells him he's going to kill himself. His name is Dusty Snyder.
Oh, boy.
And he's like, wait, wait, I'm coming over right now. So he comes over and starts pleading with him.
I smell a movie deal.
He starts pleading with him to not kill himself. So then in
Holy
front
shit.
Of Dusty, Freddie calls his mom and, like, looking at his manager, says to his mom on the phone, the quote is, Mom, I love you very much, but I can't go on. I need to find peace.
Oh, man.
Then at 3:30 a.m., also in front of his manager, he calls his wife that he's estranged from and says to her, and I quote, I love you, Kathy. I love the baby, but I need to find peace. I can't go on.
Oh, boy.
Then at 4 a.m., he just reaches under a sofa pillow, and before Dusty can do anything, just puts a .38 to his head and blows his brains
Whoa.
Out. Yeah.
Now, see, Dave, the caliber.
Oh, wow. Now, all right, now.
See,
okay, now. Now, Dave. Now, Dave.
Dave, you're going to want to think about the caliber of the gun.
I did, the detail about that is he held it to his left temple. The bullet went all the way through his brain and out the right side of his head.
It didn't stop midway in his brain and hang out?
Sometimes bullets get, they're in the skull. Bullets don't always go all the way through the brain.
The caliber, Dave. The caliber. It's a .38. It's going to go right through your fucking skull.
I didn't know
Point blank range?
Why would I know that?
How thick is your brain?
Why would I know that?
How thick is your brick brain?
Well, I do have brick for brains.
He got cement brain.
So yeah, he was still alive when he did that. Yeah. Yeah. He was, Dusty obviously calls paramedics. He gets rushed to the hospital. They perform emergency surgery. The doctors tried for 2 hours to save his life.
What?
But then eventually they were like, no matter what we do, he's going to die because the brain damage is so bad from this that he'll never recover. So,
oh, fuck, man.
The family talked about it. They took him off life support. At 1 p.m., January 29th, 1977, he was pronounced dead. He did leave a suicide note, too, which means this was incredibly premeditated because he made all those phone calls and argued with people.
Yeah.
So he didn't write the note in front of them, or maybe he did. I don't know.
I think he 100% came to some sort of conclusion.
Yeah.
Especially given the nature of what he said on those phone calls. Like, it's very like, I mean, that's very like the end of the line.
But listen to
speak.
Yeah, totally. Listen to this note, though. This note makes me like, it makes me think very well of him. The note says, I must end it. There's no hope left. I'll be at peace. No one had anything to do with this. My decision totally.
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 Radical.
Pizza. Ninja Turtles. I'm going to keep going until you think of something to say.
And then until I think of what to say. I mean, there's nothing to say. That's like so sad. Poor guy. All right, guys. So that's...
Yeah, right. See ya.
And the vibe.
It is sad. I mean, it's like...
That's so weird.
This is a person who's already dealing with depression. Oh, man, I left one thing out, too. Another sign that he was obviously dealing with depression is when he was 17 years old in 1972... He worked as an usher at a movie theater, and he got fired from the job for practicing stand-up bits at work, and that around that same time, he got dumped by his girlfriend, and he tried to kill himself then.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Right. Totally. I mean, this is a person who suffered from depression for sure. But also, he was, like, life threw him a lot all at once.
Yeah.
And even though so much of it was overwhelmingly positive, he clearly had a lot of trouble dealing with it.
Yeah, and I don't want to be like, oh, stand-ups, it's like, it's always the sad clown. It's like, oh, we're all
definitely
dealing
not
with depression. But I mean, like...
I think fame is a head fuck, though.
It's and also, like, it's at least around, like, depression in a creative, you know, field. It's gonna be around, like,
yeah,
pretty heavy. So... I think a lot of stand-ups, you know, the best thing you can do is, like, try and, like, learn how to, like, deal with it. That sounds so simplistic, but it's like...
I will say, I mean, another thing that for sure contributed to this, and we've said this on a bunch of episodes, is, like, we at the very least right now talk about positive coping mechanisms in broad life. Like, you've at least heard of therapy, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Though he did have a psychiatrist, you know?
But psychiatry is totally fucking different than therapy, honestly, unless they are that kind of...
Take Quaaludes!
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're the dude who's probably writing him the prescripts. Like, of course he's got a fucking guy, you know? Like,
right.
Yeah, I mean, they're more on the medicating end, and it's like, you really need, like, someone to be talking to, or, you know, and the way we deal with depression now. But, man.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly would... It is definitely, in a creative field, very, very easy to have a downward spiral, whether it's within your own head and not many other people see it, or it's like a really obvious long one like Freddie Prinze went through, it's easy. And yeah, please watch out, because I truly do believe that you can be happy as a stand-up comic or any kind of artist, and that that sort of weird lore around it, like you have to be sad to create art. I'm honestly, I'm the funniest when I'm happy, and I know that's true. And I really think if you pay attention to it and you what you notice when you feel bad and you take care of it and you give yourself breaks from work whenever you can,
yeah,
exercise, eating right, and but more than that, like positive relationships, focusing on your friends. Man, you know what was one of the coolest things that's ever happened to me in stand-up? I got this email from Maria Bamford like 4 or 5 years ago that was her emailing like 20 comedians that live in LA, mm-hmm. and one of her friends from Minnesota was moving to town. And she was like, hey, everyone, this is a friend of mine who's super funny. They're moving to LA. It's a really hard move. You're LA people. Give them LA advice. And then we all chimed in with advice. And then Maria at the very end was like, this is so nice. You're all so sweet. She's the nicest person who ever lived. And her advice, she was like, now my advice. And this is what it was. Take breaks. Take as many breaks as possible. Mm. Hollywood can wait. You don't need to kill yourself overworking yourself.
Yeah.
Make sure go to Disneyland, stay in bed, take as many breaks as you can.
Yeah.
Make sure to have fun. And I was like, wow, that's the best advice I've ever heard.
My advice is to be Daniel Tosh.
Yeah, totally.
If you could Tosh .0,
if you could just be sick.
If you get abs and be cool, that'll work. Yeah, it's crazy that it's like
you can be good to yourself in this and be content and have a regular life.
Yeah.
You can. You just have to take care of yourself. And you do. It's like you said, it's so many emotional ups and downs. And it's so many monetary ups and downs that you have to take care of yourself and pay attention to taking care of yourself more than in other fields,
I
think.
And honestly, like, I have friends, like, nowadays who, like, did coke. It kind of fucked up their careers. It's like, honestly, stay away from that shit if you can.
Dude,
like,
yeah.
I get the comedy's, like, can be a party. You know, it's like we're giving free drink tickets more
also,
than we're
also, if you're the
money,
kind of person that likes to get high, then you're going to like to do drugs, but fucking watch it.
Watch it.
There's a whole other reason to not do coke nowadays, too, and that's fentanyl.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And they now cut it with shit.
Yeah, they now... And fentanyl's real bad. I mean, it's so... Man, you know that there's a real problem with cocaine, if people are openly, people who use cocaine are tweeting, I do cocaine, everybody watch out.
Yeah, and that's like, when I started to worry.
Like, wow. And fentanyl, if you haven't heard, is this drug that gives you a high very similar to cocaine, and it's really cheap to make, so dealers will cut it in order to make more money. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that if you get the dose off, it's really fucking easy to overdose on fentanyl. So if you get it off just a little bit, you can just die. And a bunch of people have died already from coke cut with fentanyl. So watch out.
Yeah.
Like, really, don't do coke. Please don't do it.
Yeah, it's like, it's always been a gross thing for me. Like, I've never, like...
I don't like it at all.
I've never been interested, never wanted... I did, like, speed a couple times, and I was like, this is too much already. Like, I hate the sensation of my heart going fast.
Totally.
Like, that's not a cool thing for me. But... I get the draw, and I have a lot of friends that have certainly done deep dives and everything, but I gotta say, it's like, it's made them a bit darker. It doesn't seem to have paid off. Like, you know, however much fun it's been, it seems to have really exacerbated all their problems, because every one of them is like, has a story. It was like, well, you know, I did coke, you know, in Malibu, and then I screamed at my girlfriend.
Right,
like,
yeah.
There's always a dark play out of that scenario. It's
totally.
Like, you know, and I get, like, in the same way, you could be like, well, alcohol, you know, eventually leads to sorrow and bad things. But, you know, I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's like, if you have depression, you really got to watch the drug intake.
Yeah.
Because your brain chemistry is already offset.
Right.
It's,
totally.
It's Amigos rapper.
Man, I mean, you know, something that I really, really have to pay attention to is drinking. Drinking is a depressant. I know that I'm a depressed person. And, dude, I will just notice it, man. Because I've just gotten in this weird rhythm of, like, I will quit drinking for a few months. And then I'm like, I want to drink. And then I'll get drunk for a few weeks. And then I'll stop for a while. That's kind of how I've been doing it. But I literally, if I drink, and I don't mean every day for a few weeks, I'll, like, have a drink whatever. You get it.
No, this is good to explain, actually.
Yeah. But, man, and it's getting harder and harder as I get older. I literally notice if I get drunk like two or three times in a week, then just my baseline is sadder. It just is.
No, my therapist was like, I was like, this is a while back, but I was like explaining I'm depressed. And then I was like talking to her about like how much I was drinking and like how much pot I was smoking. And she was like, yeah, those are depressants. You're literally, you're a depressed person and you're taking depressants. Like she was just like, you're an idiot.
Right. Well, and there's the thing that people, when I talk to people about that, the thing that people usually say is like, oh yeah, I'm so depressed the next day with a hangover. And there is that problem too. But also it really does, if you're consistently drinking,
oh, it builds
like,
up.
Yeah, sort of like lower your set point. And you just makes you, that's what depression is. It's more of like a state of being when you're feeling it. And I literally like, I will then stop drinking. And within 5 days, I notice myself being less irritated at things, sleeping better, being happier in general. It's crazy.
It's so dumb how like we are just like, you know, a chemical bath in our brains.
Yeah.
And, like we're very susceptible to like nutrition. Like just little low level body chemistry shit. Of like, well, wow, I didn't eat burgers all day and now I feel better. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's like little shit like that. It does matter.
This is also a perfect time to say that, like, you know, I mean, we've made a lot of jokes this episode and you've heard us say this before, but it truly matters to us that you stay safe. If you're listening and you are feeling really depressed now or suicidal, please reach out to someone, talk to people, call that hotline. Just be good to yourself, please.
Absolutely.
It really
also
matters.
Never get into stand-up comedy. It will murder you.
Pretty good advice.
It will murder. All right, man.
That was fun.
That was a good app, man.
Thanks, dude.
Thanks for doing that. Guys, please, if you're in Chicago, come out to Album Record August 31st and September 1st. I'm doing two shows. And
10 days before 9/11.
So disrespectful. All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank
you so much for listening to Suicide Buddies. We hope to see you again next week. Just a quick reminder, if you are experiencing suicidal thoughts, feeling like killing yourself, talk to someone, please. We take it very seriously. We joke around about suicide here because we've thought about it, because joking is how we deal with it. We hope that it helps you. But if you're really thinking about it, we want you to stay here with us. Call 1-800-273-TALK. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. They're incredible. They're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They will help. You are loved. Thank you again for listening. See you next week.
Want entertainment designed just for you? Then check out customizable streaming TV from Xfinity. It makes your life simple, easy, awesome.
Xfinity gives you customizable streaming TV options. Enjoy the most free shows anywhere on any device, and even access your streaming apps right on your TV with X1. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today to learn more. Restrictions apply.